Thanks, Eileen. Thank you very much.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Wash your hands.
Thanks, Dermot. Good afternoon on this Monday afternoon. How are you? You can contact the programme 51551 ray@rte.ie. First today, before I do anything else, I want to thank the person who put together the wishing tree in UCD. See, I run around there most mornings. And I was running around this morning. I have to say, it wasn't easy. It was more of a plod than a jog or a run. It was a plod, 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 plod. And then from nowhere, this explosion of colour. And what would have been a sort of a measly little tree, no leaves, just a few little buds trying to eke their way out, but it became something different. It became a shrine to hope, the wishing tree. So I arrived there and then there's a little sign, get a ribbon, tie a knot, make a wish. And hanging from the tree was this bag of ribbons, multicolored ribbons. There were lovely blue ones, a baby blue, a pink, white, red, green. So I took one out, a white one, as it happens. Don't know why I chose white. And I tied it on the tree and I made my wish. And you know that you're not supposed to share your wish with people or else it doesn't come true. But I can tell you, I wished for all of us. I wasn't selfish this morning. I wasn't selfish. I could have wished a selfish thought, but I said, no. It's a Monday morning, beginning of a new week. Be magnanimous. So I wished for all of us something and hopefully it'll come true. And thank you to the people who put the wishing tree together. Lovely little thing, lovely. I was feeling sort of spring over the weekend and feeling energetic and industrious. And I changed bulbs, fixed three bulbs, pumped up the tyres on the bikes, oiled the chains. And then when I had the WD-40 out, I said, oh, there's the squeaking door on the oven. I better fix that as well. So I brought the WD-40 in and I fixed it. And I went from... that's lovely action there. The door of the oven opening and closing, making no sound. Lovely, lovely, lovely. Thought no more of it. Then it came to dinner time. Chicken wings. We'll have chicken wings. 230 degrees. What happened then? I don't know if you've ever smelt WD-40 at 230 degrees, but it's not a very pleasant smell. And it's one of those smells that gets at the back of your throat. You start coughing. And you fear that you might have to phone the ambulance. So we had to switch off the oven, get a takeaway instead. And it was less than 30 quid, the takeaway. But if you've any advice on, you know, getting the squeak from an oven door without having the smell of WD-40 at 230 degrees, please let me know. I turned the oven back on yesterday, opened up all the windows and doors, and it finally went, the smell. The takeaway wasn't for a 90 euro beef sandwich. Did you see this? There's a restaurant in Rathmines in Dublin called Hush. And they're offering Wagyu beef sandwiches. 90 euro. And they sold out. I remember there was a big hoo-ha about Wagyu back in the day. They're Japanese cows. And they've increased in fat percentage due to decrease in grazing and an increase in using feed, resulting in larger, fattier cattle. And as a result, the beef is tastier, they say. So there's a number of areas in Japan that ship Wagyu beef. There's Matsusaka beef, Kobe beef, Yonezawa beef, Mishima beef and Omi beef. And then there's Sanda beef as well. And they all come under the umbrella of Wagyu beef. Anyway, Hush were selling that 90 euro. So there was a bit of Wagyu beef and then crispy fried white bread, an Asian based dressing and the Wagyu. Cooked traditionally, it's bread crumbed and fried. 90 euro. And I couldn't bring myself to pay that for a beef sandwich. Could you? I tell you a man who could. Orlando Bloom. Do you know at the back of the Sunday Times magazine, they get a person to do, you know, a day in their life. So somebody interviews them and then they write it up as if the person was talking. So it's a life in the day, it's called. And Orlando Bloom, the actor, he was in The Lord of the Rings. At the age of 22, that was his big break. And he's been in Pirates of the Caribbean and other things. And he's going out with Katy Perry and they live in L.A. Anyway, I'll read it to you. People have slagged me off about talking about porridge and stuff like that. So I can't really, you know, people in glass houses and all that sort of thing. But I'd never go on like this. I would like to think. So this is him, right? I like to earn my breakfast, so I'll just have some green powders that I mix with brain octane oil, a collagen powder from my hair and nails, and some protein. I'm not making this up. It's all quite LA, really, he says. Then I'll go for a hike while I listen to some Nirvana or Stone Temple Pilots. So he's stomping it out there. So that's him earning his breakfast, which brings us nicely on to the breakfast. By 9 o'clock, 9 a.m, it's breakfast, which is usually porridge. Orlando. A little hazelnut milk, cinnamon, vanilla paste, hazelnuts, goji berries, a vegan protein powder, and a cup of PG tips. I'm 90% plant-based, so I'll only eat, and here's where the Wagyu comes in, I'll only eat a really good piece of red meat maybe once a month. I sometimes look at a cow and think, that's the most beautiful thing ever. And then he gets serious and he says, at some point in time, we look back and not be able to believe we used to eat meat. I don't know if that time's ever coming. So that's there. It's a lot of people were sharing it yesterday. It brought a smile to their faces at Orlando Bloom's expense. I bet you he knows about Wagyu. Yes, he does. That's a brilliant one there on Twitter, spotted by Aaron Eve. Can't believe there isn't a yoga studio in Ireland called Grand Owl Stretch. That's it's good, isn't it, Pater? It's good. Yeah, Pater. I know he's smiling behind the mask. That's the problem now. You don't know if people are smiling or not. They could be sticking their tongue out you. Anyway, can't believe there isn't a yoga studio in Ireland called the Grand Owl Stretch. There's loads of brilliant ones, isn't there? Like, I remember seeing that for the first time in Roscommon and I thought it was original. The hairdresser's called Curl Up and Die. But then I saw that famous American movie. Somebody will remind me what it was. And there was the hairdressers in that called Curl Up and Die. Catherine Cleary has been on to us. We spoke to her last November. She says, I'm so thrilled to be contacting you again to say thank you so much for having us on the radio last November. It has been a complete whirlwind ever since, and I'm delighted to say that we are finally at the completion stage of a renovation project for Down Syndrome Tipperary Branch. And what a day to be emailing you, but of course, World Down Syndrome Day. And there was loads of amazing events happened all over the weekend and loads of brilliant video footage and photographs. And Catherine goes on to say, I cannot tell you how much support we got after being on the show. It has been unbelievable. The renovations took a turn for the better when Dulux Paint, Gannon Homes and many more companies local and beyond came on board. In its now final stages, the clinic and activity centre look amazing following a much bigger renovation than we expected. You see, Catherine got on looking for a plaster and she told us about what the work they've been doing and the building they were in, the building they were moving to and all that sort of thing. And it obviously struck a chord with people. So it's amazing to get some good news back from Catherine Cleary. And good luck to everybody down in Down Syndrome Tipperary Branch. And good luck with your new premises and all the renovations as well. So that's great. And a lot of people were listening on Friday and they heard me play John Spillane, the Ferry Arms. And as I suspected, not a lot of people had heard it before. Yeah. Anna was on, she says, I think that song you played on Friday by John Spillane should be our national anthem. It was excellent, exciting, passionate and enjoyable. Never heard of it until today.
Well, you want to hear the talk out of yeah. The Mocky Shams and the Ferry Arms
and John.
On Saturday night? It's a Glasgow Celtic pub, all right. The walls are painted green and white. Toxie Walk, says Christy Bark, pulling pints of porter. How's the farm, Mock? Not too bad, Mock. What are you having, Mock?
A Beamish for the Mock and a Billy's for the Mock. Ballygowan for the Mock and a Brandy for the Mock. A Murphy's for the Mock and a Guinness for the Mock and...
Whatever you're having yourself, Mock.
Yeah, that's Anna. And Orla was on as well. What was the name of the song you played last week by John Spillane? Thanks. The Ferry Arms. The Ferry Arms. It's a banger. Brilliant.
Well, Irish might be there, the crab might be
really?
There, Hammer might be there, Bones might be there, you might be there yourself, you might meet Noble Shepherd or the Rat Catcher. Who's that on the whack of tobacco down the hacker in the middle of the floor? Only Robbie Parada, the Maori man.
Hey.
Who's that coming through the door? Kenny, Dahi, Packy, Jock. How's the form, Mock? Not too bad, Mock. What are you having, Mock?
One more chorus.
A yeah. Beamish for the Mock and a Baileys for the Mock, Ballygowan for the Mock and a Brandy for the Mock, Murphy's for the Mock.
What are they having yourself, Mark?
Hey, John Spillane, the Ferry Arms. You see, I thought everybody knew that song. Nobody knew it, and there it is. Isn't it great to discover something like that? That's years old. That could be 7 or 8 years old. Neve was on to us. I wonder, will we? I tell you what, I'm going to play a bit from one of those press conferences from over the weekend first, and then I'll read Niamh's email. It'll make sense. So Ronan Lynn, he's the deputy CMO, chief medical officer, and he was talking on Saturday night, and it just struck a chord with me, and I'm wondering, did it strike a chord with you, or did you miss it? Have a listen.
The reality for us sitting at this table is that no one wants to hear our message. We know that. We consistently come in here and ask people to do what we know is difficult, what we know they're sick and tired of hearing. We're exhausted. If we're exhausted from listening to ourselves talking about it, I can't imagine how disgruntled and exhausted the population are at listening to us. But I will say to people is things will get gradually easier over the coming short months if we can stop a fourth wave. And my key message last night is that we're seeing what's happening across Europe. We're seeing intensive care units across Europe having to airlift patients to other hospitals because they've run out of capacity. They're dealing with now what we dealt with here in January, and we simply cannot go back there. And so I'm asking people again, even though again I know people don't want to hear it, to stick with this for the next 6 to 8 weeks until we roll out vaccines and get a broad level of protection across the population.
It's tough. It's tough, and we need hope. And Niamh writes to Ray at RT.ie, a year into this pandemic, I've been finding it hard to stay optimistic. I'm sure many people will feel the same. A long lockdown has meant missing so much, with very little left in the tank to do more, in inverted commas. Last week felt heavy, says Niamh. On Saturday, after hearing on the radio that people would be receiving their second vaccine up in DCU in Dublin, I decided to get out for a walk and see it for myself. I headed up with my sister around lunchtime, and we were overcome with emotion. We sat outside and watched as families held the hands of their older relatives and guided them into the helix for this life-changing jab. There were all sorts of wonderful souls. A man who must have been 90, dressed up to the nines in a suit. A woman being tentatively wheeled in by her son as he held her wheelchair nervously. An elderly couple gossiping about getting to speak to Paul Reid. He's the head of the HSE, just so you know. And even a scruffy-looking dog who waited eagerly for its owner to return after getting the second dose. Every person came out with optimism and excitement. Their joy lifted my spirits. I know it's a long road and we're all frustrated, but I wanted to share with you what I saw. I saw hope. If there are vaccines being given out in your 5K, go and see for yourself. Times really are changing and better days are ahead. We'll do the quiz call out, don't worry. But first I have to play this song. 51551, ray at rt.ie. There you go, Cat Stevens, Yusuf, as he calls himself now, and maybe there's a world. I feel so stupid now with the WD-40 on the oven door. How was I to know? It makes complete sense now that you say it. How stupid do I feel? Embarrassing. Anyway, spray butter, Ray. Does the job, smells lovely. Listen to you oiling your oven. Oh my God, what a risk. Why did you not try a small amount of cooking oil? Una, it makes complete sense now that you say it. Get a feather. No need to kill a chicken first. Rub some oil or butter on squeaky hinge. Result no different than your regular roast burning off fat. Thank you. My son worked for a butcher who also wholesaled beef in Sydney, Australia. $150, that's €120 for a kilogram of Wagyu. No free samples there, says Jared in Clonakilty. And that song by John Spillane introduced me to John Spillane. It's brilliant. He has a lovely voice. He does, says Dee. And just wondering if you could wish a big happy birthday to Lisa Hogan in Athlone, her second lockdown birthday, and spending the day in work, but still having a great day. Thank you. And I wonder what people are doing second time round, because this time last year, you'd no real lead-in time to sort things out. So now that you're having a second birthday in lockdown, what are you doing to celebrate it? My daughter blew out the candles on her 8th birthday cake. She whispered her wish for COVID to be gone and to be able to hug Nana and Granda again. Oh, looking forward to the end of this. You and everybody else. Now, our quiz of today. There you go. That's the theme tune. Yep. Today, the 15th of March. And we've cobbled together questions on the events which happened on this day over the years. Over the decades, over the centuries, big news stories, scientific breakthroughs, movies, TV shows, songs, births and deaths. And we need two people to answer five questions each. Our prize today comes courtesy of Electric Ireland, who want to help us all be smarter about how we manage our energy usage. With the launch of their smart meter price plans, they're going to help us just do that, or do just that. Search Electric Ireland smart meters to find out more. And thanks to Electric Ireland, the person who wins our quiz of today, I love saying that, wins a brand new 50-inch HD smart TV. Yes! You heard me right, a brand new 50-inch HD smart TV. That's our prize today. If you want to be given a chance of winning that, you have to answer our qualifying question first and be willing to come on after 4 o'clock and take part in the quiz. Here's our qualifying question. In which Irish county would you find the town of Youghal? In which Irish county would you find the town of Youghal? 1850 715900. That's 1850 715900. And we could be talking to you after 4 o'clock.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray at rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
I'm looking at the cover of the Sunday Independent Life magazine from yesterday, and if you saw it, it's a very powerful image. 36-year-old Trina Cleary from County Wexford, and she's there topless, one boob in her hand, and showing off her mastectomy scar. If you've one boob, no boobs or two, you're still beautiful, you're still you, says Trina. And Trina joins us on the line from Wexford. How are you doing, Trina?
I'm good. My heart is racing here, but...
Well, how about me describing you topless on the cover of a magazine showing off your scar? How does that feel?
Very strange, because I used to watch you when I was growing up. Like.
Now it's strange for both of us. Thanks for that.
Yeah. Well, if I'm uncomfortable, you're uncomfortable.
Yeah, all right. At least it's a level playing pitch. Yeah. Well, listen, I don't know. What, do you say congratulations or well done? Or but you've done it on Instagram already. But mm-hmm. You have 16,000 followers. I think something like 250,000 people or more will see that cover of the Sunday Independent magazine. So that's a big leap, isn't it?
Yeah, that's huge. And like, of course, I didn't expect it to take off the way it did.
Yeah, what reaction have you got?
Oh, just all brilliant. Like, the amount of people that are messaging and just saying, like you said, well done, congratulations, superstar, all of that kind of thing. But I'm just like, hiding behind my hair.
Yeah. Like, and the people who come to Instagram, they decide to go and see you. You know what I mean? It's a different relationship,
yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
When you put yourself on the cover of a Sunday paper magazine, you're putting yourself out there in a big way. But you're making mm-hmm. a statement as well. And what did you want to say, Trina, with that?
My statement, really?
There's a few
different ones, really. Like, a few messages that I like to try and get across. Like, one is obviously, like, exactly what it says on the cover. Like, you're still you, regardless of your appearance. Like, you're still you on the inside. So it doesn't matter if you have a mastectomy and go for reconstruction, don't go for reconstruction, whatever you choose, you're still you, you're still beautiful. And it's just that body positivity for people who have undergone cancer treatments, you know, because it can just completely destroy your body. So just to kind of, like, let people know that you're still beautiful after all of that, like. And then the other one is just to maybe check yourself. That's my main message, especially to younger people, to just check yourself and be breast aware and self-check and early detection and all of that.
Yeah. And did you find a lump by checking yourself?
I did, yeah. It was back in 2018. So I was 33. I was self-checking in the shower, something that I always did from probably maybe 14 or 15 years of age. Don't know where the information came from. Don't know why or what I was checking for. But luckily, whatever I picked up along the years, like, stayed with me, and this is the reason why. So I found the lump and I ignored it for 6 months because I thought I was too young. I was really healthy, quite fit, didn't excessively drink. I hadn't smoked in about 6 or 7 years. So I ignored it. And then went to my GP eventually in the August because my breast was visibly changed. It looked different to the other one. It was, the nipple was inverting. It was painful and it just couldn't be ignored anymore. So I went to my GP and he wasn't overly concerned. He said because of my age and my lack of family history, like, he didn't think it was anything to worry about, but he sent me down to the clinic anyway to get checked. So I waited about 10 weeks for my appointment down there, and I had my triple assessment, which is your physical, your biopsy, and then your scan, like your mammogram or your ultrasound. And they were able to tell me on the 17th of October 2018 that it was actually cancer.
Right. And that's, you don't want to be hearing that. You don't want to be hearing that at all.
Yeah, part of me kind of half expected it. You know, it was that gut feeling. I often talk about my gut feeling and following your gut, you know, listening to it. So I was kind of half expecting it because that's what my gut was telling me. Mm. I was kind of, you know, my sister and my mom were all like, oh, we're going shopping after this appointment. And I was like, no, I don't think we are, like. So yeah, that kind of threw us into the system then, and things kind of moved quite quickly from there.
You got all the treatment, then it's a lumpectomy, and then that didn't work, so there's a mastectomy after that. And as you said already, you would have been offered reconstructive surgery after the mastectomy, and you chose not to go for it.
It was something like, when I very first got diagnosed, in my head straight away I went to worst case scenario, which was getting the mastectomy. So a good maybe 6 or 8 months before I actually had the mastectomy, I'd already made my mind up that I wasn't getting reconstruction. And nothing was swaying me on that, like, you know, I didn't want to go through another surgery if I didn't have to, because it's so traumatizing. I'm sure anyone who's been through it will know, like. But yeah, no, that was me. And I was just going to use the hand that I was dealt to make a difference and to show other people that, you know, you don't actually have to go and get reconstruction. You know, you shouldn't feel pressured to do it by either doctors or by society, because society deems it that you're normal to have two breasts, or, you know, you have to have two breasts to be beautiful, you know. So I kind of
Where did this come from? It sounds like you're very strong. Like, here you are, your whole world has been turned upside down. I've been told you've breast cancer, and yet you have this inner strength to decide this, that you're not going to have reconstructive, and all of those things you've just said, that you're going to send out a message to people about body positivity.
Yeah.
Where did you get that strength from?
It's like a coping mechanism for me as well, I think. You know, and if it helps one other person, you know, it means that my pain wasn't in vain, if that makes sense. You know, it's I'm doing something worthwhile, and I'm just to know that I'm leaving that little bit of a legacy behind me, you know, that people will go, oh, remember Trina Cleary and remember that message that she had, you know, and that's kind of what I want. You know, I want to leave that behind, and hopefully somebody else will carry the torch when I'm gone, and keep being a voice for people and keep being that little bit of light for people.
You're talking about your legacy. That's very sad, isn't it, Trina? Because you got the all clear in June 2019, but again, listening to your body, you had an inkling that all wasn't well.
That gut feeling again. I finished chemo in March 2019, and I had this pain in my leg, in my upper thigh, that just wouldn't go. I had like x-rays and stuff like that, but nothing ever showed up. So it was kind of just deemed that it was kind of leftover chemo issue, and, you know, I was like, okay, that's grand, just got on with it, went back to training, like, was going back to being really active, went back to work towards the end of 2019 and started getting a pain in my neck then early 2020. And I thought it was just like, you know, sitting back at a desk and, you know, my posture.
Yeah.
So I mentioned it to my GP, and he's like, oh, don't worry, you know, there's no lymph nodes in the area that you're feeling the pain. So, like, you know, he was just putting me at ease straight away, and I was like, perfect. Just said it was like an exercise injury. And then I was talking to my oncologist the following month, just in a phone consultation, because obviously COVID had hit and I couldn't go up to the hospital. And I just happened to mention to him, oh, I haven't been able to exercise, like, my neck has been quite sore. And straight away he was like, right, let's get you scanned, like, just to be sure. And then the next day a phone call came, which unnerved me straight away, because normally my oncologist, like, we've got a really good relationship, like, he'll just text and say, yeah, your scans were fine. But he asked me to come up, and I just knew straight away that that wasn't right. Like, so, like, within 24 hours of being scanned, then I had got my my diagnosis that it was stage 4 incurable. It had spread to my hip, two places on my spine, and then the neck pain that I was feeling. There was a tumour there as well, which actually transpired that I was walking around with a fracture in my neck for about 6 months before I realised.
And what was that from?
I was doing headstands in an exercise class, and I think that's when I did it. Like, it's the only thing that I
can... So it wasn't related to the cancer?
No, it's just obviously the cancer is weakening the bones.
I see.
Yeah, I'm a fragile little thing walking around.
Oh, right. So you normally would have been able to do a headstand, no problem.
Yeah.
Wow. I never heard of that before. Yeah. So that's a year ago now or thereabouts that you got your diagnosis.
Yeah, coming up to a year now, yeah.
Yeah. And when you were told that, I would imagine you start asking questions like, how long?
Yeah.
What happens next? Yeah. And what were the answers you got?
Well, what happens next was they needed to operate on my hip, and I had to have a hip replacement at 35 years of age, because my bone was just weakening, like it was being eaten away by soft tissue, which is the breast tissue where it's jumped from. So that was top of the list, was to get that done. And from there then I said, like, what's the prognosis? And he said, oh, you have years. Obviously they can't be specific in how many years, like, but the drug regime that I'm on at the moment, like, there's people that have been on it for like 3 years before they've had to change their line of treatment. But I try not to think too far ahead. Like, yeah. I live kind of every 3 months to 3 months between scans.
We all know now that the developments in treatments for cancer are, you know, they're advancing exponentially.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that there was a time when cancer was, a death sentence, but you could be alive long enough to get a new treatment which would keep you alive longer. Isn't that a possibility?
Oh, absolutely.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that gives you hope.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Go
on.
As far as I'm aware, I haven't had this conversation, but just because obviously the cancer community is so big and you connect with so many people, people who have been on this drug that I'm on, have been on it, say, like I said, for 3 years, but then there's another line of treatment that you can go on to, and another line. So, like, there's probably another 4 or 5 lines of treatments that I can go on before you're kind of like, right, what next?
Okay.
And by that stage, they'll probably have evolved even more, you know?
You said in the article yesterday you're a better person because of cancer.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, you know, it's sort of funny, isn't it?
Yeah. It's mad that it takes something so tragic to nearly give you a bit of a shake, like.
And what way do you feel you're a better person?
Like I said in the piece, I'm a bit more empathetic, or if someone's kind of acting up, I'd be like, well, maybe they're going through this, or maybe, you know, there's something else going on that we're not aware of. Do you know, I kind of, rather than get defensive if someone's having a go at me, I kind of go, right, let's be logical and just pull it back for a second. And
okay.
Now, that being said, I'm not an angel. Like, sometimes I'm like, just go away.
Yeah, well, I think your people should understand when you say just go away. You're going through a lot. Did I get the timeline right? But just like February last year, were you reconnecting with this guy, Stewie?
Yeah.
Right, okay. So you're a bit sort of circumspect in the article. I want to find out more. So you had a relationship or a flirtation 10 years ago? Was that it? Something like that?
Yeah. Yeah, it was about, I think it was maybe 8 or 9 years ago, I think.
Right.
And just, it wasn't the right time, and we went our separate ways and done whatever we were doing. And it was just after I finished my treatment the first time round, he started kind of messaging the odd message and, you know, oh, I'll go on a date with you and this kind of thing. He's going to kill me. He's up in the other room listening now. And I just kept him, like, you know, at arm's length and stuff like that, like, because I was like a strong, independent woman and I didn't need no man. And, he asked me out so many times and I'd say yeah, and then I'd come up with an excuse and be like, oh, I can't make it today. And finally, anyway, around February last year, I finally gave in after about 3 times of standing him up. And then after I agreed, I realised that it was actually Valentine's Day that I had agreed to meet him. And I was like, oh, I can't actually cancel again now. So we went and we sat down and we had a cup of tea and a cup of green tea. And we laughed at all the other couples on Valentine's Day, made sick noises in the corner. And we've been pretty much inseparable ever since.
Lovely. And yeah, was Stewie aware of your diagnosis and all of that?
Yeah.
First time
he was
around.
He's from Wexford Town.
Oh, right. So yeah, he knows, and he can ask around about you.
Yeah,
yeah. So you're getting married.
We are. Yeah. October.
How did he propose to you?
Nervously, and he nearly got sick.
That's a good answer.
Even though he knew I'd say yes, he just. One day said, I have a surprise for you, do you want it? And he goes, this is your pre-engagement ring. And then he went off to say, like, it's funny, like, that lockdown was probably one of the best things that ever happened to us, because it forced us to kind of come together and really bubble up, and it just let you really get to know someone. And then, like, as I said, like, what's the point in being with someone for about 10 years, moving in with them then and hating them? So, like, we kind of got that out of the way first and realised that, yeah, you're actually all right. Like,
So you sort of hothoused your relationship in lockdown. Yeah, right. I suppose, they used to say if you can survive sort of a holiday, you can survive anything. But if you can survive lockdown.
Oh, God, yeah.
As a new couple, you can survive anything.
Yeah, definitely.
And he's a keeper, because he gave you the pre-ring, you know, so he knew not to go and pick one out without consulting you first. So he just gave you. That's good thinking, isn't it? That's good thinking.
Yes.
Yeah,
exactly. He's a good one.
Yeah. So when is the wedding?
It is the 1st of October.
Right. And we don't know at this stage how many people can go to that wedding.
No, like, we're saying positive for 100, but, you know, whatever we can do, we'll do. Like, numbers are not really important to us once the family and kids are there, like.
Yeah. And kids. So you have a child.
I have Corey. He's 14 now, the 1st of April.
Yeah. And you say kids. Does Stewie have it? No.
Yeah, he has four kids as well.
Four kids, right. Okay. Yeah. So there's five. So there's a little bit of a Brady Bunch sort of thing going on there.
Yeah.
And is it? I take from reading there between the lines again that it's a humanist. Is it a humanist or what?
Yeah, it is. Yeah,
because the same lady who—and this is where it gets a bit sad. Very sad actually. The same lady who's going to do your wedding, you've asked to do your funeral as well.
Yeah. Well, I kind of had the interview with Chrissy Russell for the Life magazine, and I mentioned that to her, and I didn't realise she was going to actually put it in,
right,
so I hadn't actually spoke to Diane yet.
Right, okay. Right.
She's like, let's just talk about the wedding first, and then.
Does she do funerals?
Yeah.
She does. Yeah.
But yeah, no, I just really wanted to speak to Diane about it, because the way I see it, like I mentioned in the interview as well, like, I want the family and loved ones to just, you know, not have to worry about giving me a good send off, you know. Diane will have my wishes and kind of what I want done on the day and stuff like that. And then the family can just look after themselves and each other and celebrate my life, rather than worrying and, you know, just stressing out over however long it takes.
And because it is a stress, it's like, it's a very sad time, obviously, for a family when they lose a loved one. And then it's very stressful as well, because they so want to honour the, you know, what they're, and they're second guessing, what would she have wanted? But now they'll know, because you've laid it out. So there's music chosen and all, is there?
I have a few ideas in my head, and it wouldn't be your typical funeral songs as such. It'll be ones that are important to us rather than hymns and stuff like that, like Picture This, Take My Hand, was my anthem. Picture This actually came down to meet us, like, to surprise me and everything, because it was on my life list, and they played Take My Hand, so it's a very important song to all of us here. And then, like, there's other just little kind of ones that mean things, like Killing in the Name Of. It's a rock one that we'd be headbanging to, me and my sister, so that one will probably be played somewhere along the way as well.
Killing in the Name Of, I have to look that up. Who sings that?
Oh God, I can't.
Rage Against the Machine.
Yes, that's it. Yeah.
Luckily enough, Dave, who's producing today, is a bit of a rocker himself. Yeah. Because there's no barbers available, he's gone to the old long hair now. He can't get his hair cut. So the life list, this is not a bucket list, it's a life list. So talk to us a little bit about that. You want to create memories, is it?
Yeah, like, I don't like the bucket list because it's things to do before you die, whereas a life list is something that you want to do while you're alive. So that's kind of why I've tweaked it, just to put a positive spin on it. And yeah, it is, it's just a lot of kind of memory makers for the family and the kids and friends and stuff. Like that, to picture this one is ticked off. I wanted to meet them. I just like climbing mountains and stuff like that. Adventures, really. Like,
So you've been out, you've been up Mount Leinster.
Yeah, I done Mount Leinster the first time just after finishing radiotherapy. I done the Sugarloaf about 2 weeks after my surgery, lumpectomy, sorry. And then 6 months after my hip replacement, I done Mount Leinster again in the snow.
Right.
Just for a bit of extra punishment.
Well, you were a kickboxer.
Oh yeah, so, yeah, I used to be, yeah.
So you're fit. Do you miss that physical activity, or what's your story now? Are you in the gym, or what are you doing?
Yeah, I do. Like, I loved kickboxing. It's just such a good way to keep fit, and it's great for like your mental health and your mindset and stuff like that as well. Like, but obviously just with the hip replacement and just being a fragile little thing now,
yeah.
I wouldn't be able to go back. So I kind of evolved, and I was doing like an exercise class, which is just kind of dancing, and I was doing an aerial hoop class.
Right.
So it's kind of like acrobats, I suppose.
Okay.
With a hoop suspended from the ceiling.
Oh, yes. Right. Great.
So I had started doing that as well. Right now I'm not doing a whole lot of bar, just walking and stuff like that. My fitness is after taking a hit, obviously, after the surgeries and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But hopefully when things start to open up, I can get back to my dance classes and stuff like that.
I think it's the most powerful cover of that magazine. And that's a magazine that's in, you know, that's going to be in dentist surgeries and everywhere. You know, people will see that, and it sends out a very positive message. What's written on the tattoo there underneath your scar?
Pain is temporary, pride is forever.
Right. Have you any other, I know you've other tattoos, any other messages around the place? No, that's the new one.
I have one on my arm that I got just a couple of days after I got diagnosed the first time, and it says, "I got this," with the little pink breast cancer ribbon. Other than that, then, it's just kind of my son's name, my nephew's name. Yeah, I've got loads. I want more.
Which brings us nicely on to, and if people have the magazine lying around, they can scan the little thing at the end of the interview, which will donate €2 to Cancer Society. Daffodil Day is coming up, and there's more. And I see the Independent and independent.ie are helping out the Irish Cancer Society this year. Now, Anne has been on. Trina, she says, "I read Trina's very honest and moving story in The Independent yesterday, and I cried so many tears. I had breast cancer a number of years ago. I was so humbled by the way Trina handled her diagnosis and treatment. She's a wonderful young woman. To air her story to help others who will no doubt be diagnosed, as breast cancer is so prevalent. Initially, I kept the details of my diagnosis and treatment to myself. Why? I really don't know, but did eventually share it in the hope of helping others." That's Anne there. And Bernie says, "Cancer is a word, not a sentence. I too had a mastectomy and made informed decision not to have reconstruction. I'm so happy with my decision and my body." And listening to Trina, "I too was diagnosed with breast cancer in August last year. I had my lumpectomy and radiotherapy, and I'm waiting to go back to the breast clinic to see if it has worked. The thing that struck me most about all of what I've been through is the men I've met that also get diagnosed with breast cancer. Men need to check themselves regularly too. Waiting for my surgery, a man was called ahead of me, and my first day of radiotherapy was another man's last day of chemotherapy, and he was then going to have radiotherapy when he recovered from the chemo." So that's something worth saying as well. Trina, you're amazing. That's, you know, and you're all the things that, whatever word people want to use to describe you, that's positive. And I know there are words that people don't like, inspirational and brave and courageous and all those things, but you are all of those things.
Thank you.
And I know, and you know this as well, but you're going to help people by doing what you did and putting your picture on the cover of that magazine yesterday and telling your story. Listen, I hope yourself and Trudy have a wonderful day in October. We might talk to you just in the lead up to it on the day or something like that. It'd be nice just to wish you well and see how everything's going. That'd be lovely. So we'll talk to you then. Is that a date?
Yeah,
that's
right, a date.
Right. Trina, mind yourself. Stay safe.
Right. Thanks, Ray.
Bye now. Bye. Bye.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Text 51551. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, a good few texts and emails coming in about Ronan Glynn, and we will get to those after 4 o'clock. But right now on the line is Conor Pope, our consumer champion. How are you doing, Conor?
Hi, Ray. Good. I'm good. How are you getting on?
Good. How's the mood? We have to check in on you.
Do you know what? I'd say my mood is kind of like the mood of an awful lot of your listeners. I think everyone's just getting, you know, a little bit fed up with the whole thing. It just seems relentless. And I know that when I saw the figures coming out last night, over 750 people diagnosed with COVID, I was like, when are they going to start coming down again? I mean, what else can we do? We're all in lockdown. Everything is closed. And yet still the cases are remaining persistently high. And it's just grim. But I guess we just have to stick with it because, you know, the vaccines are coming and they're coming slowly, but they are coming.
Yeah. And I think slowly now, but I think there's going to be a moment when it's just going to speed
up. We'll all be swimming in vaccines. And that's what they keep saying. And I really look forward to going for that dip. Because I don't know about you, Ray, but I've got a lot of friends in the UK and I see them posting on Instagram. And these would be people who are the same age as me and they're all getting their vaccinations now. And that's kind of tough. Because you see these people who are, you know, they're perfectly healthy, they're relatively young and they're already getting the vaccines and we're still a long, 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 long way away from that. But, you know, we just have to stick with it. I wouldn't be giving the public health officials or NPHET or anything a hard time. I think it's tough. It's tough for them. And I think we will get through it.
OK. Now, PriceWatch at RTE.ie if you want Connor to grapple with any of your consumer issues. Dear Connor, I was due to fly to Spain with Aer Lingus last May, but the flights and the holiday were cancelled. So I got vouchers to cover the cost of the flights amounting to just under €500. I was hoping to use them at some point this summer, but that doesn't look like it's going to happen either. I want to cash in my vouchers and get my money back, which is my legal right. How do I go about doing that?
Yeah, this is something that's actually started to become more apparent in recent days. And I think there's an awful lot of things we're learning about aviation rights and how the system works. Because back in last March, Aer Lingus were, to their credit, they were offering people vouchers and they were offering people vouchers plus an extra bonus of 10%. So let's say if you had a ticket booked for, you know, for a €500 ticket, you get €550 back. But more than that, the vouchers were going to stay valid for 5 years. So that seemed like a very generous opportunity for people. And an awful lot of people took those vouchers. And like this listener, an awful lot of people took vouchers working under the assumption that they would be able to travel pretty soon after the summer. Like, in fact, most people thought, OK, the coronavirus pandemic will last from March till maybe July, August, and then we'll be grand and good to go in September, October. The reality is that we're into another year of it. And the bad news for this listener, in fact, the bad news for anybody who's taken vouchers from any airline is that's the end of the story.
Oh, is it right?
Because under EU 261, which is the flight regulations that we've talked about endlessly, not just in relation to the COVID-19 pandemic, but
the volcano
over many years,
and all those
EU
things,
261 gives people clearly illustrated rights when it comes to air travel. And one of those rights is you are legally entitled to a refund within 7 days if an airline cancels a flight. So that was the rule that was in place pre-pandemic. That's still the rule that's in place now. However, airlines can also incentivize you and offer you a voucher, which you can then take instead of the cash refund. Now, that's what Aer Lingus did in this case. But according to the regulations, and I was on to the Commission for Aviation Regulation about this, according to the regulations, once you accept the voucher, that's it. They don't have to give you a refund in cash terms. So there will be a lot of people who would have accepted the vouchers last year, thinking, "Oh well, sure, I can always cash them in or whatever it might be." But they'll find now that they have vouchers. Now, to be fair, this is not me giving Aer Lingus a kicking, because Aer Lingus have been good about this, and they've also created a system whereby the vouchers are flexible and they don't have to be used in full in one booking, and all of these different things that are in place. So it is kind of like cash. And if I was this listener, I would just be saying, I will travel at some point.
The problem is, you see, for a lot of people, their circumstances have changed. You know,
absolutely.
And
they're
gone from having a job to not having a job. And now they can't see themselves going on a holiday in the foreseeable future. And yet they have this €500, which is an awful lot of money, and they can't cash it in. And that must be very frustrating for people.
That would be very frustrating. But remember, the voucher is there for 5 years. So like, you mightn't be able to see your way towards, you mightn't be able to picture yourself going on holidays this year or next year.
Yeah.
but maybe in 3 years' time. And would it, like, the only way to look at this is to look at it positively. And the positive interpretation of it is, I have that money set aside in the bank for a holiday at some future point.
Now, and you've spent it already. You've spent it already. That's the way it looks. Yes,
Now, the way Ryanair issued their vouchers was, they issued the vouchers for a year, and then they said, if the vouchers aren't used within the year, then you can get your cash back.
Okay.
So Ryanair passengers are being treated slightly differently by Ryanair to Aer Lingus passengers, but there's pluses and minuses to both of them. And as you say, the money is already spent, so it is something that maybe people could start looking forward to, as opposed to going, oh, well, I really desperately need that money back,
because
they don't have any kind of legal framework for getting that money.
Now, what about vaccine passports? Where's that at?
Yeah, remember we were talking about this a couple of weeks back, or maybe it was even last week, I can't remember, but there's all this talk about how we can roll out vaccine passports across Europe to allow people who have been vaccinated to travel. Now, there are certain obstacles to that, for obvious reasons. I mean, because an older cohort are being vaccinated first, and that means that people who are in their 20s or 30s will be discriminated against, because they won't have the vaccine, they won't have been vaccinated, so they won't be able to travel. So it doesn't look like a vaccine passport system will be implemented across Europe. But what the European Commission has rolled out is something very similar to it. It's called a digital green certificate. And the European Commission confirmed that this was their proposal they were putting on the table, and they confirmed it last Wednesday. Now, that would offer citizens of all EU member states digital proof that they had either been vaccinated against COVID-19, they had received a negative PCR test result, or they had recovered from the vaccine or from the virus. Now, and that's an important thing, because a lot of people who have the virus, who had the virus, now have the antibodies. They mightn't have been vaccinated, but under this digital green certificate, they would still be able to travel within the European Union to countries with the system in place. Now, it's a really key part of the European Commission's common path for safe and sustained reopening, because they want Europe to reopen. Now, obviously, some countries are really in favour of this. Greece is pushing it strongly. Spain and Portugal, countries where they are very, very reliant on tourism. France, Germany are very reluctant. And I think the Irish authorities will be very reluctant. So no country is going to be obliged to implement this system. But if they don't implement it, they will have to explain to the European Commission what's their reasoning behind not introducing the certificate.
Right.
And the thinking is, they just want people to be able to travel. Because, you know, there is an issue here. Like, Joe Biden is saying that all American citizens will have access to a vaccine by the end of May. The UK is powering ahead with its vaccination program. And we can't have a scenario where 60, 70, 80% of the population are vaccinated, but yet still all of the same restrictions that were in place pre-vaccination are in place post-vaccination, because that wouldn't make any sense. It would be bad for countries, and it would be bad for individuals. Because we need, like, the Irish tourism sector alone, like the Irish tourism sector, both inbound and outbound, is worth around 10 billion euro.
I know, but you're
most of that is coming in.
But the quarantine is just, it's not even in place yet, and I'm reading about it today on the cover of the Irish Times.
Yeah,
11 days quarantine. People have to pay for it themselves, so they won't be able to board a flight to come to Ireland from certain countries unless they can show evidence that they have 2,000 euro to pay for the accommodation in the quarantine at the other side. That's now, and we're talking about opening the country up.
Yeah,
sorry, I shouldn't laugh.
Yeah, no, 100%. The quarantine thing is a slight. No. The quarantine thing is a different thing, and that's for these 33 so-called designated countries. They're on a category 2 list, and they're mostly in South America and Africa, and they're countries where particularly worrying variants of COVID-19 are spreading.
Mm.
So that hasn't come in. But you're right. I mean, they were talking about introducing this mandatory quarantine in Ireland in January. The legislation was signed into law on March the 7th. It's now the 22nd of March.
Yeah.
And we're waiting for Stephen Donnelly to roll out the details of the mandatory quarantines towards the end of this week.
Mm.
And to be honest, I think that's one area where I think things could have and perhaps should have moved faster.
Right.
Because, you know, you don't want
these
variants coming in if you can stop them.
But I can't see a time where all those countries that you mentioned, like the UK and America, just because they're all vaccinated, that we will allow all of those people to flow into our country. I don't know. Can you see that happening?
No, because we'll still be on some sort of
lockdown here. That's not going to happen. No.
Absolutely. But I would not be one of these people saying, oh, let's open up the borders and let everyone travel. I think we have to be really cautious and we have to be really careful. But if Micheál Martin, if he's as good as his word, and he said a couple of weeks back that 80% of the Irish adult population would be vaccinated by the end of June, Now, even if the timeline slips a bit and it's 80% by the end of July or 80% by the middle of August, if there's a huge percentage of the population are vaccinated here and in another country,
of course things are going to change.
Perhaps then it's time to talk about
some sort of vaccine passport.
And we talk about bilateral arrangements between... Exactly, to allow people to as much for their mental health and well-being as anything else, to allow people to travel and to allow tourism businesses in this country to operate. And this is not a question of putting the economy before public health, because I don't think anybody really wants that. You have to look after public health, and the economy then comes after that. But, you know, there has to be, I guess, one of the things, and I had a big piece in the Irish Times about it on Saturday, and the one thing that was coming through from every single person who I spoke to within the tourism industry, be they airlines, airports, hotels, travel insurance companies, travel agents, everything. All they want is a bit of a plan.
Yeah, well, you see...
So they know what's coming next.
We've discussed this before. She can't plan. You know, anyway, we'll have to leave it there because I have to go to Nook. But people are asking for plans and dates and everything, but you can't. You can't. Good luck, Connor.
But you can have
talk to you next week.
Ones, you
that's for sure. Bye. I will talk to you next Monday. Bye.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Tweet at Radio Ray RTE. Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Nish Toshin, I'm the Fifth Skelton, and Oak La Carte Wallish. Grandmaga Carte, thank you very much. 51551 Ray at RTE.ie. Ray, don't mind them telling you off about the WD-40. Do they not know we men go around with a can of it in our trousers belts, just looking for something, anything that needs unsqueaking, says Brian. Yeah, WD-40, your only man. I've been there, only I use 3-in-1 oil. Terrible smell. Now, if the same occurs with anything indoors at home, I use cooking oil, as in frying oil or rapeseed oil. Works a treat. I know that now, Kieran. Thanks to everybody. And just advice, if you have a squeaking oven door, do not use 3-in-1 oil or WD-40. Oh, that's worth your licence. License fee. Bathroom and toilet supply shop in Dunleary is called Waterloo. Hey, best bit is it's on Wellington Street. That's Chris in Dunleary. And the song getting me through this lockdown is Ben Folds, Keep Your Head Up. I even have my children singing it and it's keeping them buoyed up. I must look that up this evening on Spotify. I haven't made it through yet without crying, but maybe one day I will. My parents will receive their second dose on Wednesday. They're in their 90s and late 80s and I haven't seen them in 7 months, even though they're only 90 kilometres away. And Cindy's been on. She says, thank you for the little push that I needed to keep going with the restrictions. I was feeling a bit despondent today. I actually was at DCU yesterday with my husband. He was receiving his first vaccine. It's not my turn for a while, as he's a bit older than I am. I was blown away by the organisation that went into the event. People were so nice and everything just flowed. When you made the comment about brighter days ahead and the email that you read about some people that were there and observing the elderly queuing for their jab, I thought about what you read and yes, you're so right. That's the start of the sun, just peeping from behind the cloud. We have to wait a bit longer for the sun to completely emerge, but it will happen. So thank you for making me look at yesterday from a different perspective. Many thanks, Cindy. Well, it was more Niamh than me, Niamh's email. And Joan says, I just heard the clip of Dr. Ronan Glynn once again having the unenviable task of asking the people of Ireland to stick with restrictions a little longer. He always conveys his message with such genuine empathy and care and consideration, having no economic or political agenda, just simply doing his job, that is to protect the public health of the nation. I know each and every one of us have different circumstances, but overall, even with restrictions, we can still do so much. And have so much. We have constant means of communication, FaceTime, etc. We can exercise outside, run, walk, no need for a gym, plenty of great food and treats, access to Netflix, etc. for entertainment. I'm a self-employed beauty therapist and I naturally have been financially affected by COVID, but I never complain. It's a minor temporary inconvenience when you compare it to loss of life, which cannot be temporary. Please, next time you moan about restrictions, just think this is a worldwide pandemic and has affected everybody. But the most important thing is that lives are saved by restrictions. And that's the bottom line, says Joan. Thanks for that, Joan. Now this. Yes, it's our quiz of today, 22nd of March. And a great prize today, courtesy of Electric Ireland, who want to help us all be smarter about how we manage our energy usage. With the launch of their smart meter price plans. And you can search Electric Ireland smart meters to find out more. And thanks to our friends at Electric Ireland, the person who wins today will get a 50-inch HD smart TV, Charlie Clark. How does that sound to you?
Oh, Ray, hi, that sounds amazing.
How are you? You're doing some important work, Charlie.
I am.
Go on.
I'm working now in the HSE contact tracing, one of the centres.
Okay.
In Cork.
And you have a sheet of paper in front of you with all the questions and the way they go, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
No. I don't have any paper at all.
No. So you just ring up and how does it go? Give us an imaginary...
Oh, sorry.
No, not the questions for the quiz,
yeah,
Charlie. No,
sorry, I misunderstood you. Yeah, that's a good one there. That's like the WD party there now, isn't it?
I don't think it works on the brain, Charlie.
My brain's gone to mush.
So we'll start that again, will we?
Yeah, we'll start that one again.
Okay.
I would just like if I'm contacting somebody who's like a close contact of a person with COVID, I would be providing public health advice.
Yes.
To them. And also arranging a test.
Okay. And so, you know, you say, hello, this is Charlie
from
the HSE.
From public health, you know, calling. They would already have gotten a text.
Okay.
The system is very good, Ray.
Yeah.
It's set up to send a text out immediately. Once we've contacted somebody who's unfortunately caught COVID, we'll have a clinical type person on talking to them straight away. To help them out, you know, and talk to them over the phone, and advise them what they need to be doing in terms of isolating and stuff and at home, and then we will also then establish any close contacts that they've had with other people, like family members or friends or workplace or school or whatever, and we'll note all that into the system here then ourselves. We have one large database nationally, and we're all accessing it. All the centres around Ireland.
Brilliant.
So we're on it immediately, every day. So if you see all those contacts that are announced, cases and stuff, we're on that straight away in the morning.
So a very interesting and worthwhile job you're doing, and you came straight from retirement into that job.
I retired on the 19th of November from Amazon. And I started on the 20th of November.
Good stuff.
With this, but they were looking for people immediately. They needed to get them on board and get the whole thing, you know, up and running and all that.
Top of the queue. Congratulations on your 40th wedding anniversary
weekend. Yeah. Yesterday, yeah. Yeah.
What's that? What's the 40th?
Ruby,
right. So what did you get Ursula for the...
I remembered that it was Ruby, and I bought her a little ruby stone on a necklace.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah, so I gave her a surprise at the weekend.
And were you able to celebrate it in any shape or form?
Not really. Like we just called out to our son, Leonard, and then we, you know, just they got lovely balloons for us with 40 on it.
Right.
You know, the helium balloons.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
And we had a bit of crack with them. All right.
So you inhaled them later on yourself, and Ursula. Speaking to each other in a high pitched voice.
Ursula bought me an electric screwdriver and a toolbox.
And a year's supply of WD-40.
Yeah.
Any man's dream.
I'm a great believer in WD-40. It'll open anything.
Yeah, no, not on ovens. Don't use it on ovens. Okay.
Yeah, I said the smell would be bad. Yeah.
You're up against Enya Walsh, who's in Waterford City. How are you doing, Enya?
Hello, Ray Darcy. How are you?
I'm good. It's odd when people call me Ray Darcy. I feel it's a sort of a sign of affection, Enya.
We all love you, Ray.
We do. Go on out of that. I wasn't looking for a compliment there. Now, so you, what's your story with work? You're out of work at the moment, are you?
I'm out of work a year and a half, Ray. I'm a dental nurse since forever, and I hurt my back.
Right.
But it's okay, thank God, and I could have went back, but with things the way they are, I'm going to wait a little while.
Okay. You're at home with Toffee the dog?
Yeah, she's in there beside me.
Right. And are you able to go out for a walk with the back?
Oh, I am.
Oh,
I'm fine now. Like, I can't do too much. I do a nice bit of yoga, and it helps. It strengthens. And I can go for my little walk and that, but I can't cycle or I can't go doing gymnastics or anything
but
like that.
You never did gymnastics, so...
No, I did not.
That was... I don't know if you heard the beginning of the programme. Somebody had suggested, or somebody had questioned the fact that there wasn't a yoga class called the Grand Old Stretch.
If we could get out and have a dance, we'd be better, wouldn't we?
Well, listen, we have this guy coming on Thursday. He does this dance class to reignite relationships. So I don't know if that's...
Oh, God,
something.
Got a bit past that now.
Okay, so who's... Your daughter's where in the
world? Glenda, my daughter, is in Germany and she's doing equine veterinary.
Right.
She has the rest of the year and then another year and she's done, please okay. God.
And it's Skype and Zoom and all that you're talking to her.
Oh, she got love for it. It is, yeah. But she has a couple of friends there that are in the same boat. So it's grand for him, right? You know, just make the best of it, really.
Right. I'd say you miss her. That's what, yeah, I'd say you miss her.
Absolutely, we all do. Yeah.
Okay. We have to give away a 50-inch HD smart TV to one of you people. 5 questions each. Whoever answers most correctly gets the prize.
Good luck, Enya.
Thank you very much. Same to you.
That's Charlie there, Enya. I know it's difficult to remember his name because they said it at the very beginning, Charlie. So good luck to Charlie. Good luck to Enya. Whoever answers most correctly wins the TV. Here we go. Charlie, question one for you. On this day in 1809, Charles VIII, there you go, Charles VIII, succeeded Gustav IV to the Swedish throne. What are the two colours on the flag of Sweden? Red and white or blue and yellow?
Oh, that's blue and yellow.
It is. Enya, on this day in 1983, Belfast-born and Dublin-educated Chaim Herzog was elected as President of Israel. What are the two colours on the Israeli flag? Blue and white or blue and red?
Blue and white.
Correct answer. Charlie, audio question. Have a listen to this.
Let it go, let it go. I am one with the wind and sky. Let it go, let it go. He'll never see me cry.
On this day in 2018, the musical based on that film opened on Broadway. Can you name the film?
My granddaughter loves it. It's Frozen.
It is. Well done.
I heard it many times.
Yes. Okay, Enya, have a listen to this. Now, have a listen to this.
Wow! I'm a hero! Wait till Wilma hears about this.
Fred, we demand to know what's going on. You've been acting very strange.
Raiding our icebox.
Hitting me on the head with a sandwich.
And flirting with girls.
On this day in 2001, William Hanna, American animator and studio founder, died at the good old age of 90. He was the creator of that animated series, you heard a clip from there, featuring Fred and Wilma and Barney Rubble. Can you name the series?
The Flintstones.
Yabba-dabba-doo, you're correct, well done. Charlie, question number 3 for you. On this day in 1928, Bill Archer, American Republican politician, was born in Houston. In which US state would you find the city of Houston?
It's in Texas.
It is. No problem there. Enya, on this day in 1957, a massive earthquake shook San Francisco. In which US state would you find the city of San Francisco?
Oh, California.
Correct answer. You're flying it, ye two. Charlie, have a listen to this.
Don't you want me, baby? Don't you want me? Oh, don't you want me, baby?
On this day in 1963, Suzanne Sully, singer with that band, was born in Sheffield, England. Can you name the band?
Human League.
Correct answer. Enya, have a listen to this. On this day in 1997, that song was at number 1. Can you name the group?
The Spice Girls.
Correct. Obviously released for Mother's Day that year. I just copped that now.
Lovely.
Yeah, lovely,
lovely
song. Yeah. 4 all. It's down to the wire for Charlie and Enya. Okay. Answer this correctly, Charlie, and you put Enya under a bit of pressure to get her final question correctly. If she gets it correct, we're into a tiebreak situation. Okay,
right.
Here we go. Good luck. William Shatner, Canadian actor, most famous for his role as James T. Kirk in Star Trek, was born on this day. But in what year? Was it 1931, 1935, or 1939?
Ooh, that's a tough one.
Yeah.
I would say 35. I'll go at the middle.
All right. He's actually 90 today. It was 1931, Charlie.
Gosh.
Right. Okay. Enya, an opportunity for you.
Okay.
Get this right and you're walking away with the telly. Get it wrong and we go to a tiebreak situation. Good luck. Andrew Lloyd Webber, English composer, famous for Phantom of the Opera and Cats, amongst many other, was born on this day. But in which year was he born? 1940, 1944, or 1948?
Oh, God. Andrew Lloyd Webber. 48.
You're saying 48?
Yeah.
That would make him 73 today.
He's not that old, is he?
He is. He is that old, yes. 73 is the correct answer. 1948 is the correct answer. Well done. You're our winner.
Oh, brilliant.
Well done.
Yeah, there you go.
Oh, great.
That was very close. Charlie, hard luck.
No worries at all, Ray. I was enjoyed playing.
Yeah, yeah, I enjoyed the chat as well, and keep doing what you're doing.
Thanks, Ray.
Yeah, mind yourself.
Well done, Inya. Yeah.
Thank you. Bye, Charlie. Bye.
See you, Charlie. Okay. We're going to send Charlie out, Ray Darcy Show mug. Inya, well done.
Oh, Ray, my hands are sweating, my heart's beating. This is awful. I don't want to comment on what that is. Oh, Jesus. Oh, sorry. Oh, I'm so delighted, but I'm shaking. I need a coffee or a whiskey or
no,
something.
No, don't have a coffee. That's the worst thing you could do. Listen, I have to tell you now that because we are very friendly with the people at Electric Ireland, they've given us a 50-inch HD smart TV to give to you.
Oh, that's from my Glenda when she finally comes home.
Isn't that lovely?
Oh, I'm delighted, Ray. Thank you very much. Shaking now. Thanks so much.
Well done, Enya. Mind yourself.
Lovely to speak with
you,
Ray.
Great to speak to you. Bye now. Bye.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
51551 for your text. Now, I'm in awe of comedians, and I think most people are. Doing stand-up comedy in front of a live audience, that's remarkable. It's awe-inspiring. Comedian Bernard O'Shea is on a mission to teach ordinary people like you and me to do stand-up as part of his new TV show, Bernard's Working Comics. It starts tonight on RT2 at 9:30, and Bernard's online. How are you doing, Bernard?
Ray, how are you?
See, I'm awe-inspired by you.
Oh, well. Fair play to you. I'm not even awe-inspired by myself. Come here, very quickly. I feel your pain on the WD-40. I was online. The kids, when they were small, they kept drawing on the walls.
Right.
And I went online and said, oh, put WD-40, get it off. And it does get it off, right, off paint. But my wife came home and went, why does the whole house smell of oil? And it shined, and it was like, our house was like the Lascaux Caves. They'd drawn everywhere, and
everywhere.
You'd oil everywhere, and I tell you one thing as well. You shocked the life out of me. I didn't know William Shatner was 90.
Yeah, William Shatner's 90. Yeah, right.
Unbelievable. Yeah, but
and he's still going strong.
No, yeah,
he was.
Yeah, unbelievable. I couldn't believe that. But So tonight is the episode with the guards.
Yes. You had an in there, didn't you? You had an in with the guards.
I did. My father was a guard in Portlaoise Station for nearly 30 years.
Aha.
But he retired back in the early 1980s, he was there and. So when we were looking at different workplaces to go into, we were always thinking, myself and the producer Adele O'Brien were thinking, God, wouldn't it be great to go into the guards?
Yeah.
And it was like, but it was a kind of a pipe dream. And then one thing led to another, and she did an awful lot of work on it. And we were allowed to go in and go into Portlaoise Station, which is where he was stationed for 30 odd years. Oh, yeah. So it was just, I don't remember the station, or I don't remember going in or out. And I was very small when he retired. My dad was I was maybe 3 or 4 years of age when my dad retired.
Right.
You know, so I don't really remember him as a guard, to be honest.
Yeah.
Little bits and pieces, but but it was interesting.
So was he an older dad? Is that why? Was that
yes,
it?
Yes, yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So I think he was 50 when I was born.
Right.
So, and speaking of kids, just one after coming into the room.
All right.
You could go the whole day. Do you know what, Ray? I'll go the whole day here, and they wouldn't bother me. And the minute I have to do something, they're all in.
Yeah,
they're
looking for your attention, which is lovely, Bernard. It's lovely. Yeah. Listen, it's a lovely hour. Well, it's 40 minutes. I watched it this morning, and you get unbelievable access to. He's gone off with a child, is he? He is. He's gone off with a child there. He's trying to talk a child down off. Hello. He's gone completely.
No, I'm here.
There.
I'm here. I'm here. Right. I'm here.
I thought you were trying to talk a child down from a shelf or something there. No, but
no.
there's you get lovely access, and it's there's something very heartwarming about the whole thing. Because I've never seen the Guards shown in that light before.
Yeah, and that's the big thing. The programme is primarily about the two guards that go and do the stand-up, Joe and Sarah. And, you know, so, like, you know, there was a little bit of me at the start, you know, just going around the station and doing a little bit of stand-up. But primarily the programme is about the people who will go on and do the stand-up, particularly with the guards, who their life and their job is very much law and order, and there's a procedure to everything. Mm. And now all of a sudden you're asking them to do stand-up. And, you know, we really did have to convince Sarah and Joe, because it's massively out of their comfort zone. And, you know, sometimes I forget that, because, you know, even though I haven't done, say, radio in 2 years, I did it for 10 years. So you get used to it, and it means nothing. Like, it means like you can go on and do it. Yeah. Whereas with them, it's like, I've never done this before. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? So it takes a huge
I'd say it's up there with the scariest thing ever. I know, like, I have nightmares about, you know, somebody introducing me as a comedian and then being pushed out onto the stage. I have nightmares about that. I think it would be the most stressful thing in the world.
Well, sometimes when I'm doing the clubs and when I go out on the stage, I think the audience are having a nightmare as well. But it is a massively daunting task,
particularly for them,
because I think their whole thing was, I remember Joe said to me, it's from a scene tonight, Joe says, not to give too much away, he said, what's your biggest concern? And he said, and which I did not know, he said, like, you know, a big concern for us is to be sacked or sued, because it's a real concern.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? And you know, I remember saying to him, like, when the minute that came out of your mouth, like, for you, it's a massive concern, but for an audience, it's like, woohoo!
That's very funny. Yeah.
Like, you know, so
you were a bit, you're a bit devious with Sarah, because, like, and I spotted it, and she spotted it as well, because at the beginning you're going just 3 minutes, and then halfway through the program it was 5 minutes, and then just before she went on stage it was 7 minutes, like.
Yeah, well, Sarah is one of those people that is such a naturally. Oh, I'm gone again, am I?
No, you're there, you're back.
Sorry,
you're
can
back.
You hear me?
Yeah.
Sarah is very interesting tonight, if you look at it. She's a naturally funny person, and so is Joe, but she's very natural. She's a warm, giving person.
Mm.
And for me, like, I would say to her, get up and read the telephone book, because, you know, and that was one of the things that myself and Adele wanted to get through, was let's try and get these people on stage in their most natural form, doing what they think is funny, you know, because, you know, and I felt that with Sarah. I just felt every time I was in her presence or she was talking, she was very captivating and it was very enjoyable.
Yeah.
And it was just like saying, like, you know, and Joe was slightly different. Joe was nervous, but yet when he started to write the stuff, it was really good. And it was like, so it's very much about their journey and also putting their hand up to say, yes, I'll do this.
Yeah.
You know, as you said there, you know, it can be a nightmare of people, not just stand-up comedy, but like you know,
speaking
you
in public,
have people that I'm sure you have listeners. That are terrified of a speech at work or, you know, a best man speech or whatever. So it was a massive undertaking for them to do it. And, you know, like, it's and fair play to them.
I tell you what, you're very good at cajoling. I don't know what sort of career you'd have as a chief cajoler, but you're very good at cajoling people to do things they don't want to do.
Well, I have to tell you, like, a little bit behind the scenes as well. We had a great production team, and they'll also,
they are cajolers, you know,
be cajoling, and being helped and get asking people to help and stuff like that.
Yeah. Well, listen, I really enjoyed it, Bernard, and it's you know, you're very funny in it and very warm and. I saw a side to you and the guards that I hadn't seen before. So it's an engaging 40 minutes tonight. Bernard's Working Comics, the first of three, RTE2, 9:30. Is that it? All factually correct there?
That's all spot on. Yeah, fantastic,
yeah.
Ray.
Yeah, here's just before you go.
And by the way, Yeah, go on.
No, you go.
No, I have to say, you gave me one of the most surprising moments during lockdown in my whole life, because we started watching The Den again.
Oh,
and it was this bizarre circle of life where we were, like, I was going, oh my God, I watched this. And now we were sitting down on a Sunday evening watching The Den. And my youngest, or the middle fellas, didn't want a turkey because of Dustin.
That happened way back as well. Remember, there was a campaign in the Evening Herald to save Dustin. There you go. Yeah. Well, I've been told, and you know as much as I do about people in here, but I've been told by people in here that it's coming back in the autumn at some stage. So there you go. Good luck tonight, Bernard. Great talking to you. Mind yourself and the family. See you. Bye bye. That's Bernard O'Shea.
Thanks,
there.
Ray. Thanks. Bye, you. Bye, bye, bye bye.
That's Bernard O'Shea there. That's it from us. Cormac and Sarah are on the way. We are back tomorrow at 3 o'clock. Enjoy the rest of your Monday evening.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.